Hey guys, I have been experimenting with something special. The experiment is still going on. I would love for you to be a part of it. This is an experiment called the HA Infertility Blueprint. So the blueprint is, this is only for you lucky people who have listened to the end, by the way. The blueprint is access to our DIY Restore Your Fertility course, which is generally $497. And access to moi for a 45-minute breakthrough call where we're going to go through your case and you're going to walk away with at least, just from our conversation, one thing you need to do and work on, ideally a few. This is really for people who have been trying to DIY their recovery and are not sure why they're stuck, what's not working, what is working, and they just need to sound off some of the ideas with someone like me. So the way to get access to this is to head to my DMs at Danny Sheriff, or you can do the HA Society one, which is at the HA Society, and say the word blueprint, just so I know what you're talking about, and I'm going to send it directly to you, and we'll get the ball rolling. So this is totally free. This is free, even though usually it is worth $497 and a 45-minute consult with me is in the hundreds somewhere. So definitely jump in on this. I'm actually only taking a few of them because this is an experiment for another project. So let's meet, let's hang out, let's see how it goes. Again, go to Instagram, DM me at Danny Sheriff, the word blueprint, and I will respond to you with access to the Restore program and to a breakthrough call with me.
Freedom is a choice, and yet so many people decide not to be free.
Welcome to the Hypothalamic Amenorrhea podcast, the show dedicated to helping women get their periods back and restore their health naturally. I'm your host, Danny Sheriff, and sometimes the show is hosted by other members of our expert team here at the HA Society. Each episode dives into real stories, science, and strategies for your period recovery. Whether you're deep in the HA journey or just starting to piece it all together, we've got you. And if you're looking for more support and connection, I promise you there are many other women going through this too. Come join us inside of our private community at thehasociety.com. Let's dive in.
Okay.
Take two.
Hey guys.
Wait, are you counting down?
No, we just started.
I could. See? Okay.
No. I mean, I can see it on the screen that it's.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good now.
See, she's.
Whenever y'all are ready.
Technology.
Shh. Welcome to the HA podcast. It's me, Danny. That's Mishi. That's Ashley.
Hello.
And today we're answering your questions.
Yes.
Not from the perspective of doctors. Because we're not doctors.
Not your doctor.
But from the perspective of your friendly neighborhood, BS investigators. Is that still the tagline on our Instagram?
It is.
Nice. Help you find the reason why you are not producing hormones.
Ovulating.
Getting periods. Getting pregnant.
No cervical mucus.
Why you're grumpy all the time.
No libido.
Peeing your pants.
Definitely no libido.
Oh, yeah. Dry vagina. Painful sex.
All of those things.
Broken hips.
So I have a few Q&A's that I've collected over time. Guys, keep submitting them either through Instagram, in the comments on YouTube, or straight to the email. But let's kick off with Phoebe.
Yes.
Ooh.
Phoebe says, hi, I don't know if I can ask questions through DM, but I'm going to try. I had HA for 2 years and finally got my period back, and I'm pregnant. But I'm extremely nauseous and I'm not counting my calories anymore because I know it's way too low. But it doesn't feel like I'm starving myself because I just don't feel like food. It feels natural for me to listen to my hunger cues, but I keep thinking, is that actually okay with my history? The only thing I can actually eat are plain breads with cheese, like crackers or veggies, no fruits. This is really common for all pregnant women.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, first off, everybody eventually hates veggies and fruit. Okay. It's like a biological thing.
We're just like, these are
fine in small doses. Because there's not much bang for a buck. I will start off with...
Was that the end of the question?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I will start off with...
Yes.
If you're... How long ago did she get her periods? Her period back? Did she say that she's been recovered for...
She had it for 2 years and she got it back and now she's pregnant. But she doesn't say, like, okay, how pregnant.
Like, how, like, recent. I just feel like you know how much your body needs in general.
Mm-hmm.
And so dipping below to the point where it's triggering your concern is enough to say, hey, I should probably be adding in at minimum 3 meals.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just feel like... chasing feelings is how we got into HA. You know what I mean? And I do recognize that when you're pregnant, I mean, I was nauseous my entire pregnancy. But that doesn't somehow exempt your body from still needing to be fed and still needing a energy to sustain the baby and you.
I do think it's so strange that we lose our appetite during such an important time not to.
Yeah, that is strange.
I do think it's strange that we do that.
Well, I think it's just strange in general. Well, like, I don't think it's strange that we no longer crave fruits and veggies because those are the ones that actually have a high level of, like, Listeria, E. coli, stuff like that. So it makes sense that our body and tends to not want to
have a lot of energy attached to
and
it.
Yeah, and then plus isn't, yeah. So that actually makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. True.
But to your point, like, if this was such an energy thing, you know, yeah, I would say at minimum, you still need 3 meals with protein, carbs, and fats. And so, like, just because we don't feel it doesn't mean we start to ignore basic logic and needs.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? You know what I mean? Like, you may not feel like breakfast, but that doesn't mean that you don't need it.
Yeah.
You may not feel like lunch, but it doesn't mean that you need it. Nor do you enter in this superior human state now that you have a baby that, like, you can now last with less food.
Yeah. It's hard to be intuitive when you have a disordered relationship with food.
Or coming, so you're like, we don't know enough about Phoebe to know where she's at. How is her relationship with movement and exercise and just her body before she got pregnant? Are we carrying over bad habits and mindsets into this, thinking that it's magically going to change just because there's a baby on board?
Yeah. And then it just, like, that's kind of the difference between somebody who gets support through HA recovery versus somebody who does it on your own. Not to say that you cannot do it on your own and you can't heal mentally and physically, but what tends to happen is the mental part lags when you don't get that objective support that you kind of need.
Well, just because when someone's there asking objective questions from the outside, we're just not capable of doing that for ourselves.
We're not capable of being reflective. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I think the fact that, like, whatever's tapping into her, if that's, like, mental hunger or her intuition, that's like, I feel like I should probably be eating. She's having this banter in her head. You should probably, that's your sign that you need to eat more.
Yeah.
To me.
For sure. It's actually not specific to whether you've had an HA background either. Like, pregnant women just, you really do need to eat. And a lot of us lose the appetite and it is just important that you keep going.
Yeah.
Until it passes.
Your body is going to, like, if you don't have physical hunger cues, it's going to try to get your attention some other way. Yeah. But we've been so trained to suppress any sort of hunger that we're just like, well, that thought, like,
And that we've been taught that the hunger is only strictly your stomach growling.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Hunger starts at the first thought of food, people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Danira. She says, hi, Danny. I'm Mai. So now her name is Mai.
Oh.
Sorry. And I hope I'm not bothering you too much, but I have been thinking about my sleep schedules lately, and I know it will affect the recovery of a period. A lot of times I've been sleeping from 10:30 to 11 p.m. and waking up at around 5:30 to 6 a.m. But some days I can't sleep, and I'll stay up until 1 to 3 a.m., even though I've tried to sleep. Is this still considered normal, or this has to go? Again, thank you for your YouTube videos, and I've watched and binged it all. I love it.
So is this related to So the recovery or?
Yeah. So I think that she said it made me understand more about my HA. Like, so she's had HA, mm-hmm. but right now her sleep is funky. And this is coming up a lot in the society conversations.
A lot. Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like that she can't get to sleep, but we also have a lot of women who wake up at 1 or 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. and can't get back to sleep. Mm-hmm. Sleep mm-hmm. disruptions are really common mm-hmm. in recovery. And I think where it shakes people up is they haven't had that issue before. Mm-hmm. And suddenly it's happening. And that happened to me too. I was always sleeping the whole night through. I was a great sleeper. And then I went into recovery and I just like was up at 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. a lot. Mm-hmm. Sometimes to eat. Sometimes I was just like, bing, ready. And then especially when I was pregnant too.
Oh, yeah.
So hormonal fluctuations will cause that. And I always just advise people not to worry about it.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder... if the focus on sleep is just because, like, it feels easier to try to address that than to, like, eat more.
Mm-hmm. I actually have a bunch more information from her in a different email that I just found.
Okay.
I guess that was a follow-on email.
Okay. Oh, okay. Let's hear it. Well, before I say anything.
All right, so Maya's a 16-year-old Indonesian studying in Taiwan for learning purposes. Mm-hmm. I had been studying abroad for 8 months, and it's been many changes. But English ain't her first language.
Well, bless her for trying.
Yeah. So I'm going to read it verbatim, and just so you guys know.
Yeah.
There's been many changes that I've felt. By the way, I'm 162 centimeters tall. That is my height, roughly. Okay. I'm 164. And currently at 54 kilos.
I'm getting it right now.
Okay. It all started when I decided...
118.
Okay. It all started when I decided I want to get fit while being overseas. My school has a running track, and I would challenge myself to run about 2 minutes every morning. All right.
Okay.
That's cool. After a while, I began to learn about fitness, weightlifting. I would search on YouTube for workouts at home and only using body weight. I dig deeper and found how to track calories, and I tried intermittent fasting from 4:50 p.m. to 12 p.m. at noon. The mm-hmm. next day.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
I will only drink water. For dinner, I don't eat rice, so I only eat it within lunch, which is probably a big deal in Taiwan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Actually, before I moved, I feel like whenever I walk for a long time, my knees would start to hurt. But when I moved mm-hmm. on, around August, I realized that's no more a problem. I walk for a long time and I don't have pain. That's where I found myself that I had lost some weight. And I went from 59 kilos to 56. And, of course, I was happy about it. So I continued doing that.
Mm-hmm.
In October, my menstrual cycle began to fall out of place. I had 2 periods in 1 month between 4 to 11, the 4th to the 11th, and then the 19th to the 21st of October. Then November hits and I didn't get anything. For a while, it felt great doing fasting, but I began to feel fatigue. I started to do breakfast again, but I only would eat 2 boiled eggs. The period loss continued. I did work out twice a week, and I started to eat normally, and I finally got a period at the end of February when I went back to Taiwan. I was so happy at the time, and at that time, I was introduced to the gym, and I work out 3 times a week. About 1 full body workout with weights. I was feeling, 1 hour full body mm-hmm. workout with weights 3 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
I was feeling good every time. I think I was restricting myself on food, having only eaten 2 boiled eggs for breakfast and then lunch with rice, protein, and veggies. Same with dinner, but no rice.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Again, no period at all. So last week I was just realizing that this is not okay, and I was thinking that this was okay because I have energy and no symptoms, which indicates that this is serious. I wonder if she means like no fertility symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why I came across your YouTube searching about period loss for teens. I've been listening to your advice, and right now I'm trying to eat more day by day, but I don't want to give up the gym, and I've decided to reduce the intensity to 20 minutes a day. What advice would you give me? Should I stop exercising completely to see my results? Will my muscle mass reduce if I stop the gym? How long does it take approximately for recovery? How long should I eat more? Will I gain a serious amount of weight when I eat more to recover? Will my body composition too change drastically? I hope you don't mind answering these. We don't mind answering them. Bless it. Okay, so that
I know why question, you're not sleeping. Yeah. Girl, you need carbs.
You're running on stress.
Your cortisol is waking you up and you have no carbs in your system, and that is why you are not sleeping well. I'm not saying that's for everybody, but for this lack of carbs and a lack of food in general.
Yeah.
I'm a believer in eating as per your culture. Mm-hmm. Maybe not only for cultural reasons and just having a normal relationship with food where you are.
And family and stuff like that. But
I also think you are probably adapted in this way.
Absolutely.
Don't be being Asian and not eating rice.
Yeah. No.
Don't come at me being Asian and not eating rice.
Yeah. Your body is not appreciating that.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So,
because she's new. What's so interesting is that every single time I have somebody, I will ask them, hey, what does your grandma cook? Can you just go to your grandma's house and have her cook you traditional food? You know what I mean? Whatever that is for you. I feel like that is one of the fastest ways is just to go back and eat your traditionally ethnic food that your grandma would be making. Cause I don't think your grandma's making rice cakes. Yeah.
I think we need to go great-great-grandma at this point.
Yeah, my grandma would be doing canned spaghetti.
Yeah.
But she made a solid coleslaw.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. It might get the job done, though. You know what I mean? No.
Yeah. Everyone knows what you mean. I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
So should I stop exercising to see the results? Yeah, probably.
I feel like her question really was how do I recover and not gain weight?
Yeah, will my muscle mass reduce if I stop going to the gym?
Well, you're right. You're likely not building much without the hormones.
Yeah.
And how long, under-recovered and not eating. Yeah. So you're
getting diminished returns at this point in time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're getting leaner, and so you think you're getting more muscle, but you're likely not. Because you don't have the substance to build and recover.
Yeah.
And just... actual calorie-wise and hormone-wise and sleep.
Yeah.
So, we're actually not building much.
I think you're right. Yeah, and I think you're right. It's, will my body composition change drastically? Will I gain a serious amount of weight? How long do I have to do this for?
Mm-hmm. These are all fair. How old is she?
This is 16. Every HAer's question.
Yeah. Whether you're 16 or 36.
It doesn't matter.
Which, we answer in many places.
And we're not going to get individual. A different answer.
You're not going to get a different answer. And it's a little individual, but their short answer is, you need to stop doing the things causing the problem.
Which is weight loss right now.
Will your body change?
Yes.
Yeah.
How much? Okay. We don't really know. For how long? We don't really know.
Depends on how much you're willing to change, how quickly. Yeah.
And how fast can you recover, depending on how much you resist the process. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But typically, our clients see... when they're following specific guided feedback, 3 to 5 months, you know what I mean? And then when it comes to body composition change, yes, it your body is going to change because at the body composition it has right now, it's not enough to support hormonal production, function, and ebbing and flowing.
Yeah.
So yes, it will have to change because you can't just build muscle and gain your cycle back.
Yeah.
And so while this seems silly because it's, but I don't care who you are, what age you are, these are the same questions we get, whether it's 16-year-old or a 36-year-old.
Your age is really actually
important. It's actually not even a factor.
Yeah.
Because we all have the same questions.
Yeah. And if your body changes as a result of
it needed to
being
change.
Fully nourished.
Oh!
it was meant to happen.
I don't know why. I just feel like
I know what you mean.
So dumb when I say that word.
Yeah.
I have no feelings towards it.
The softness in that.
Oh! Yeah, maybe I'm too hard.
Let's be softer.
If your body changes as a result of nourishing yourself adequately, it was meant to happen.
100%.
And I think at 16, it's like, if you have any expectation that your body's not going to change, you are sadly mistaken from where you're at now. Like, you will not have the body of a 16-year-old at 20, 22, 30, 35. Like, no. Like this time in your life, you're going to have... It's going to be a small window.
That's such a good point. You know what I mean? Because I think that's when a lot of women start developing disordered eating around the puberty, because we're told to not change. Our bodies should not change. And that is a period where your body's changing a lot.
Yeah. I mean, even if, like, you didn't have HA, your body is going to change.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it is not a train like that
has already left the station.
Yeah, that train was never available to you.
Yeah.
So I hear that, you know, but I feel like this is a time and place where, like, I hope at 26 you don't look like a 16-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Love it.
Mm-hmm.
It's officially summer, which means more sun, more time outside, and yes, you need sunscreen even on cloudy days. But if you're recovering from HA, you already know how much hormone health matters. And you've maybe heard us discuss Sky and Sol on the pod before, because we are legitimate users of their product. And in fact, Mishi, who's our senior non-toxic product correspondent, first brought it to our attention as a gift, and now Ashley, Abby, and I, we just won't use anything else. It might surprise you that most sunscreens are made with chemicals like oxybenzone and avobenzone. I might be saying those wrong, but that's how they read. And those are ingredients that researchers have flagged as potential endocrine disruptors. When your body is working hard to heal, the last thing we want to do is be adding these disruptors onto your body's plate, much like the way we try to avoid caffeine in recovery. We are wanting to avoid these disruptors. This is why we use Sky and Sol. It's the cleanest sunscreen that we have found, with a short ingredient list that you can actually read. Stuff like tallow, non-nano zinc oxide, and beeswax. Non-toxic, reef safe, and loved by over 200,000 customers. And yes, it does work. You will not burn. It's one of the few products that we trust enough to bring to our HA Society retreats as well. And we put them in the swag bags because we actually check what is in everything that we hand to our community. So if you want products that help support your healing journey, check them out. Sky and Sol. It's S-O-L. So skyandsol.co.
This one's a great question. I think it's Oksana.
Oh.
But, and she's in the society.
Yeah.
But she's Russian. And so the real spelling of her name.
I have two Russian claims right now.
Oh.
Same time.
Russian.
I love that.
And they're both. Well, I won't say their name, but go ahead.
Yeah.
They got let's Russian not do names. That.
They got Russian names. Okay. Hi, Danny. I have a question about weight gain during recovery. How long does it usually last? Will my body eventually adapt to the amount of calories I'm eating, and will the weight stabilize? So set point theory.
Mm-hmm.
How can I accept my body? I'm used to being slim, and right now I'm finding it really hard to accept it. How can I work with body image? Will the weight start to go down? For what reasons? Because weight can only go down with a calorie deficit, right? Similar questions, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. why don't we just take it one at a time?
Bali, what was her previous one? She was in Indonesia. And then now this is Russian. This is what
I just
what
I'm saying. I don't know where Oksana lives, but
age and location does not matter.
Yeah, you're still affected by
this is still
society.
This is still the question.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, let's do it one at a time.
Yeah, I love it. Okay. How long does this weight gain usually last? We don't really know. Mm-hmm. For some of us, the weight stays. It just stays, a little bit falls off maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Other people lose a lot more weight. It's a tough one, because something I think we need to address is some of you'll be in really tiny bodies mm-hmm. going into normal bodies
mm-hmm.
and you think that you have weight to lose, mm-hmm. like that yeah. you should be able to go back.
Such a good point.
This is a slippery slope.
Yeah.
We at the HA Society, we like to fully restore our weight and leave it alone.
Mm-hmm. And then let the body do whatever it wants to
decide
do.
Decide where it wants to land.
Mm-hmm. I do think that if you're saying how soon can I attempt to lose weight? Because I feel like that's the actual question. Like, so can I start to try to lose weight right now? I would always say 6 months to a year, you need to leave your body alone. Mm-hmm. And I also think to heal metabolically so that even if you did want to lose weight, you actually need a good 6 months to a year to be left alone so that even if you to attempt, it's not trying to poke the bear that, you know, that like you've triggered, right?
Yeah.
And needs a certain level of homeostasis and safety, you know, all those things in general. So I always try to say 6 months to a year, and if and then, like, I'm not saying that you can't do it. I'm not saying that it's wrong. I'm just saying that we need to table it, put it on the shelf, mm-hmm. and in 6 months, let's just revisit it, you know? Also, one thing that I like to encourage women is, like, do you even know what your body looks like if you were to eat normally and just work out and hang out? Or do you only know your body out of, like, a binge and restrict mindset because you've always been restricting since high school? Do you even know what your body looks like lifting consistently, you know what I mean, over 1 to 2 years?
Yeah, you have a very distorted view of what's actually natural and normal for you.
Well, like, you actually have no data of you look like just being consistent.
Leaving yourself alone.
Yeah, leaving yourself alone, like being consistent in the gym and just not dieting. So wanting like, you actually don't have any real life experience.
Yeah, wanting to go back to where you were or change that state is like, you're not exactly what you're saying. Yeah. You're just like not allowing your body to be where it naturally is. And you'll never know if you keep messing with it.
Yeah, it's such a tough thing. Or it's like, oh, I'm sorry to say, but the more you want it, the less you can have it.
Well, and I hate saying it, but the sooner you try to rush this timeline,
the longer it's going to
take. The longer it takes and the bigger your body like rebels.
Yep.
We encourage you to let go of the desire to lose weight if you ever wish to lose weight.
Yeah. And then just...
It's so weird, but it's so true.
I know. Mm-hmm. What's the second question? Yeah, the second?
How can I accept my body?
I like this question. So I feel like starting the journey of not... that, like, realizing that your body's purpose is not to make you happy, and your body is not your purpose. Mm-hmm. Like, you have a purpose, a calling in life, and your body is a vehicle for that. You are not put here on earth, and your only purpose was to micromanage this body.
Mm-hmm. Imagine.
You know what I mean? Like, that is actually not your purpose. Like, but what are you called to do? Like, what are your dreams? What is your purpose? What is your vision? Like, chase, like use your body to chase that. You know what I mean? And then the other thing of, like, if you are looking for your body to be your sole place of happiness, you are dedicated to having the most self-absorbed life because you are not trying to connect and be happy in nature, in, you know, with those around you, family, friends, connections. You're like, my body is the only place for my happiness. I'm not saying being at war with your body. I'm not saying hate your body. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is, like, bro, that literally cannot be your only source of happiness. That is wild.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, they would deny that that's what they're doing. But what they're actually doing is like, oh, no, I mean, I'm doing this so that I can then be happy.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
If they're not thinking that this is currently what makes me happy, because some are, and that's their defense. That's
absolutely.
But then a lot of us are like, yeah, when I get to the other side of this, I'll be happy, and so it's worth it. And like, to your point, is in order to accept your body, you need to use it to actually chase a life that you want that has nothing to do with.
Yeah, it should be a vehicle.
It's a vehicle.
It's like that guy who works on his car, but never finishes it.
Or never drives it anywhere. Never drives it. But it's his source of happiness. You know, yeah. I just feel like, at what point was your whole life purpose your body? Like, how did we get to this place where, like, you have no goals outside of your body. You have no dreams outside of your... That is the definition of being self-absorbed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And not in a malicious, mean way that I'm calling you that. I mean, I'm just saying that if that is every single day we're driving, like every decision and every goal and every thought is driven for that, then it's like you're so wrapped up in yourself that like you literally don't have the capacity to be part of community, to be part of society. You know what I mean? And surely you have more to offer the world to connect in a way, not so much like, what do I have to offer? You know what I mean? But just like to connect with the world outside of your body.
So good. That's how we all got here. So we like it.
Yeah.
We like it. Life is cool. When will the weight start to go down? When you're not looking for it.
Yeah, when you've surrendered and, like, let go of that idea.
I think, like, whenever your body's had a therapeutic dose of safety. Which comes from not micromanaging it, not controlling it.
And, energy safety and mental and emotional safety.
Yes. Oh, 1,000%.
Yeah. So when you catch yourself being like, when can I start to work out again? I'd be even really careful allowing yourself to constantly have those thoughts.
Yeah.
Because it sends a message to your hypothalamus that, like,
It's
coming down the pipeline. Yeah. Like, we're not safe.
What is that reinforcing by entertaining that thought? Like, something is currently wrong with
that, like, nothing's actually going to change.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that we're still not good enough. I still need to fix you. I still need to change you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to let you temporarily do this, but we're going to change again. Back to the only way I know how. And that really may keep you from recovering fully.
Yeah.
So yeah, like the fastest way out of this thing you want to get out of is to let it
go. I know. It really is the fastest way. What is that saying? Where slow is fast?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like slow is fast, or else you're going to have to circle back and redo it.
Yeah.
Not want to be redoing this. I'm telling you.
Yeah. But I think like the fact that asking the question is telling us exactly where you're kind of at in this process. Like, you still have an idea of what is an acceptable body and all of these things. And until you can let go of that as something that you need in order to feel adequate, loved, worthy, yada, all the things. Yeah, identity. Yeah, that's where the work is. It's not on your body. Your body is irrelevant. It's that deeper part.
So the final part of this question was, and for what reason does it start to go down? Because weight can only go down with a calorie deficit, right? So she's saying, like, am I going to need to diet again actively?
No,
none of you need to diet.
Yeah. No, I think that that's where people, and I think unfortunately, like, influencers, like, we're at the mercy of influencers where they're like, you're just not doing it right. Like, if you're hungry, then you're not doing it right. You know what I mean? Like, if your hormones are balanced, then you should just lose weight and you're just, like, not doing it right. When like, I do believe that in order to lose body fat, you do have to create a caloric deficit. That is what happens. I don't know.
I think that our bodies just respond differently to caloric deficits. Like, sometimes you can be in a deficit and your body won't lose weight because it needs it, which is common in early recovery, because it needs it. Mm-hmm. And other times you can be in one and only lose a small amount of weight.
Other
times you can be in a small deficit and lose a lot of weight.
Yeah.
And it has a lot to do with the safety of where your body is. Is this an appropriate time? Is this, like, can I handle life with being in this deficit? And, like, how intentional is this deficit?
Yeah.
Because I think that matters.
Yeah.
Like, how severe is this deficit?
You will find yourself in your most natural body when you are living your most natural life.
When you
life.
Leave it the flip alone.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think, too, like, your body holds on to a lot when it's doing a lot of healing and repairing work, and it has to And it needs extra to do all of that and also turn on a really expensive system. And then once it's gone through all of those things and it's just like, you know what, we probably don't need a lot of this extra that we have on, like your metabolism's up and running and it's being much more efficient.
And I know that food is coming.
I think I can release some of this. And that's where you'll see that shift in that distribution. And it always happens with clients when they finally like surrender to the process and let go of caring.
Yeah.
When they've let go of like, you know what, I've fought this long enough, I'm just going to leave my body alone. And that is the moment in clients when you see their weight redistribute.
This is the irony, is like you can really only have that if you let it go.
Yeah.
And but I think that's great because it means, gives you a reason to let it go.
Yeah.
Go ahead and let it go.
Yeah.
And only then will you eventually, with patience and consistency and practice over and over again at feeding your body when it says it needs food, is the idea that your body will decide to operate at a different homeostasis.
Well, that you can have it. Like, you have a different level of like resiliency too.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Where a body that's not been chronically dieted for the last 4 years has, like we see this, you know, back like when like we used to work for just a weight loss company. If I had gotten somebody who had never dieted, so I had like a newbie, their body responded completely different than somebody who had been trying to diet for 5 years.
Yeah, that is actually it just happens
differently because you know, like I think that there's a difference of like resiliency and stuff. You know,
stubbornness.
You know, people are like, "Oh, my body's so stubborn." Like, well, I don't know. How long have you been underfeeding it?
Yeah, maybe stop messing with it.
I don't know. Like, how long have like not felt safe? Mm-hmm. How long has your cortisol been like jacked up? You know what I mean? Like, there's like reasons why like the body does it.
True.
Yeah.
That was fun. Thanks for joining us for this little episode, guys.
I know, it's short but sweet.
Send us your Q&As.
Powerful. Short but powerful.
Like Mishi.
Yes.
And Ashley. Stay short. Stay powerful. Stay stout.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh. You know, one time Blake, oh bless him, he never made this mistake again. And he meant it in the most loving way. But I did kill him with my eyes. He was like, "Ashley, you just look so..." Oh my gosh. What was
petite?
It? That was not the word. What did he say? Squatty?
It's because I said stout.
No. It was triggered. He said something like that. And I was like, no.
Stocky?
No. I'm gonna text him.
Because like, he remembers.
He's like,
no, like, I actually will never say this out loud again. We'll have to catch you up on the next one.
How did you refer to me that one time?
You call me that one time? And then he'll be like, "You mean like 10 years ago?" But you know, like, I think it was something like squatty or stocky or
something. Squatty's not a word, so it has to be.
Sturdy? Sounds like something.
No, it was something.
I would describe you as sturdy.
I am. You know what I mean? But it was something I was just like, and he was just like, I really thought I was trying to compliment you. And I was just like,
No. You're calling out my insecurities.
No, like, we don't talk about that.
I feel like sturdy is not that. Not that offensive. It couldn't have been that.
It wasn't. No. But
if you, like, for me, sturdy, I would feel a type of way about that. Because then I'm like, you're noticing the things that society's told me is wrong with my body. Yeah. You know?
Except now we all agree that thick thighs save lives.
Yeah, I've been saving lives.
And that's pretty sturdy.
For a while.
Thicker than a Snicker.
Okay, we'll have to start that the next time.
All right.
You know, the next time we'll have to figure out what is it that Blake called me.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, Brandon. Are you guys going to do one more?
I couldn't. I think there's a limit of where you're producing quality and then it declines.
You're like bored.
Yeah.
Well, that was good. Okay. 5 episodes.
I know a question on your mind is, how long will recovery take me? And I know that because I get that question a lot. And it's tough because the timeline can be really unknown. And look, I can't give you a magic answer that's 100% accurate. But what I can do is ask you a whole lot of questions to understand things like what your lifestyle is, where your mindset's at, what have you already tried, what are you willing to try and not willing to try, and a lot more questions like that to determine a general range that you could expect. So I created a quiz to help get that answer to you because I was asking these types of questions to girls all the time. So I thought I'd make a quiz. And it's called How Long Might It Take to Get My Period Back? The quiz. So once you go through it and you answer the questions, it will give you not just a time range, but a quick description of how you might be feeling to help you connect with that answer and see and make sure, yes, like this fits, this feels good for me. And don't worry, these ranges don't have to be set in stone at all. The goal is to allow you to look at the range that came based on your answers and decide, you know, do I want to do this or do I want to speed this up? So once you get your range, you'll also get a few emails from me that week with some important tips that are specific to you to help you work through some of the roadblocks that could be slowing you down and in turn speed up your recovery time frame. So take the quiz now. Just head to quiz.thehasociety.com or find the link in the show notes and let's do this. That's quiz.thehasociety.com.